sukhiyatanang pariharami. May I look after myself with ease. We chant that every evening. Chant it every morning. It's a reflection that we have to provide for our happiness. Have to provide for our well-being, both on the physical level and on the level of the mind. So as we say that, may I look after myself with ease. On one level, we're expressing the wish that we hope they'll be able to find food, clothing, shelter, medicine, find good people to associate with, so that simply getting along in the world will not be difficult. But when you look at the world, what does the world have to offer? It's not necessarily an easy place to live. There's no guarantee that the job you have now will stay with you all the time. The health of the body will stay with you at all times. These things are going to change, which means that we have to look after ourselves on another level if we want to find real well-being. That means looking after the mind. We have to take very good care of the mind, because that's going to be our refuge. When the Buddha says the self is its own refuge, he's referring primarily to the mind. We have to create good qualities in the mind so the mind doesn't get frazzled and frayed, doesn't become its own worst enemy. You want the mind to be its own best friend. This is one of the reasons why we practice the Dharma. As we practice the Dharma, it's like providing food, clothing, shelter, and medicine for the mind. The practice of the precepts is like clothes for the mind, because the function of clothing is to protect ourselves from the vagaries of the climate, but also to cover up the parts of the body that cause shame. In the same way, the mind has its parts that cause shame, our unskillful attitudes, our unskillful intentions. So as you practice virtue, you're learning how to say no to those things, even though they are in the mind. The things you would like to do and say that would harm yourself or harm other people, you learn how to say no. So at the very least, you don't present an unattractive appearance to the people around you. You keep your words and your deeds at what's called normalcy. But it's not just a matter of words and deeds, because after all, who's making the decisions? Who's giving the orders? It's the mind. So already you're training the mind to learn how to say no to some of its unskillful habits. And that way you're protecting yourself, at the very least, from the external bad karma that would come from giving in to those habits. And as for meditation or practice of concentration, that's food and shelter for the mind. As the Buddha said, this is your vihara dhamma. The attitude that you take is a place where you want to dwell. So you're not dwelling on issues outside. This person says that, that person says this. If you dwell in that, it's an awful dwelling. Because look at the world around us, all the horrible things that people do and they say. If you take those as the place where the mind dwells all the time, you're going to suffer. So you have to give the mind a good place to stay where it's not dwelling there. So you dwell in the breath. Allow the breath to come in and out in a way that feels really good. This is the factor that shapes your sensation of the body. If it weren't for the breath, you wouldn't be even aware of the body. And the way you breathe is going to have a huge effect on how you sense the body. And that, of course, is going to have a major impact on how the mind feels, the attitude you're in. So you think about the breath. Think about staying with the breath. Make up your mind that this is really where you want to stay. This is going to be your dwelling, regardless of whatever else comes up. That means while you're beginning to focus on the breath, it's obvious that other thoughts are going to come into the mind, but you don't go with them. You stay right there with the breath. It's like the sounds of the crickets outside right now. If you wanted to have absolute silence before you could concentrate, you'd have to go out and kill all the crickets. But you have to realize, okay, the crickets are there, but your breath is right here. The breath is not being destroyed by the crickets. You breathe in, breathe out, be aware of the breath, at the same time that the sound of the crickets is in the background. Well, have the same attitude toward various thoughts that come up in your mind. It's like the sound of the crickets. If you go trying to chase them down, you're going to spend the whole hour chasing down these thoughts. It's like that game Whack-A-Mole. A mole comes out of this hole, and you try to whack it with a little mallet, and then another one comes out of another hole, and you whack that with that mallet, and just never end. You end up getting all tired. The moles are having fun. And you spend all your time trying to hit them over the head. And who gets tired? You get tired. To remind yourself, even though there are thoughts in the mind, the breath is still here. It's not destroyed by the thoughts. So make this your dwelling. This is where you're going to take your stance. And make it a nice dwelling. Make the breath comfortable. Because after all, breath here doesn't mean just the in and out breath, but there are many levels of breath energy in the body. There's the breath energy that flows through the nerves, flows through the blood vessels. It's like a very subtle form of in and out energy that is coordinated with the in and out breathing. And there's also a very still, kind of bright breath that, if you pay very close attention, fills the body. Doesn't move at all, just very still. Then the important level is to focus on is that one that goes through the body. So as you find a comfortable rhythm for the breathing, start noticing how are you feeling this energy in the other parts of your body. Start making a survey, say down around the navel. Watch that part of the body for a while. See how it feels as you breathe in, see how it feels as you breathe out. And if you notice any tension or tightness there, allow it to relax. If there's any sense of blockage, think of the breath dissolving the blockage away. And again, find whatever rhythm of breathing feels good for that part of the body. If you want, you can think of breath energy coming in and out of the body right there. So you don't have to pull it from anywhere else. There already is breath energy there. Simply allow it to connect. Allow there to be a sense of fullness. As the muscles and the blood vessels in that part of the body are allowed to relax. So you're not squeezing the blood and the breath energy out of that part. Allow it to be fully nourished. This is where you get to that other part of the meditation. It's not just a dwelling, but it's also food for the mind. It feels good. You can feed on that sense of well-being. And then when that part of the body feels good, then you move up. Say, go to the solar plexus. Do the same there. In the solar plexus, you go to the middle of the chest, base of the throat, middle of the head, then down the spine, out the legs, back to the back of the neck, and then go down the shoulders and out the arms. So you get a sense of how the breathing feels in the different parts of the body, and you allow it to be comfortable. This way your home for the breath becomes a good place to stay. And it has an appeal that it wouldn't have otherwise. If you try to be mindful of the breath, but it's an uncomfortable breath, it's going to be hard to stay there. The mind is going to resist. It's going to keep looking for other places to go. And it'll latch on to those thoughts that are whirling around. But if the breath feels good, and you have that sense of fullness, think of the fullness going out and saturating every little cell in your body, out to the tips of the fingers, out to the tips of the toes. everything gets full. And it penetrates in deeper and deeper into kind of the core of your body. The parts that may not always seem to get enough breath energy, let them have all the breath energy they need. Into the middle of the brain, into the middle of the heart, deep into the throat. Let the whole body be saturated by that sense of fullness and ease. And there'll be a sense that the thoughts that are running through the head get further and further into the background. So they really are like the noise of the crickets. They don't really disturb you at all. They can even grow silent because you're not feeding them. Because when you pay attention to these things, that's when you feed them. You keep them going. But as you decide, I don't need to pay attention to these things, they're like stray dogs and cats that you used to be feeding all the time. And of course they come and they swarm all over your yard. But when there's no more food, after a while they go away. They may cause a little trouble first because they're upset that they're not getting fed the way they used to be. But you just have to be persistent, patient. After a while you find that they go away. So here you are with a good shelter, a comfortable home, with good food. That sense of ease and rapture is very nourishing. But there will be the part of the mind that says, wait a minute, I've got other things I've got to think about, other things I've got to worry about. This is where you need medicine for the mind. This is where the discernment comes in. As you gain a sense of what really is important in life. To what extent can you straighten out the world? You can straighten out a little bit. There's never any closure, there's never any completion out there. The work of the world never gets done. When people retire, it's not because their work is done, it's simply because they can't work anymore. But the work goes on. Other people have to take it up. And there are a lot of things that should be done that never get done because there's nobody to do it. Yet the world still goes on. In the meantime, people who spend all their time focusing on how much they want to straighten out the world, straighten out other people, they end up getting frazzled and all pulled out of shape. And generally miserable. This is not to say that we shouldn't try to make the world a good place, but that task comes secondary in importance. First importance, you've got to look after your mind. Because if the mind gets strung out, then it really can't do a good job either inside or outside. So you've got to develop right view so you have a sense of what really is important. As we chanted just now, having respect for concentration is an important principle. It may not seem like much simply having the mind still. It may seem like you're lazy or irresponsible, but you're not. You're looking after the mind. You're taking care of this most important part of the various tools that you have. And so this is medicine for all the misunderstandings by which the mind makes itself ill. It gives rise to greed, gives rise to anger and aversion, jealousy. Feelings of being mistreated and wronged. Because what happens is you tend to feed on those things. If you don't have good food inside, you tend to feed on that stuff, and that's going to make you sick. So you have to see clearly that your genuine food has to come from within. As for what other people have to say, you don't have to feed on that. If you do feed on it, you're like, as John Lee says, someone who feeds on things that other people have spit out. They've chewed on it a bit and spit it out on the ground. You go down, pick it up, and you feed on it. Then you get sick, and then you blame them. And the problem is the fact that you're feeding on what other people do, what other people say. Of course that's going to make you sick. So in addition to learning how to concentrate, you have to have that respect for concentration. This is part of the path to true happiness. It has to be developed. And understanding that is an important part of right view. You've got to protect this. Learn how to have this sense of being centered in the breath, in the body, not only while you're sitting here, but as you go through the rest of the day, as you go to work, as you drive, as you talk with people. It's like having a mobile home. You carry this sense of well-being around with you. So you're fed inside. You have this sense of shelter inside, wherever you are. And it puts you in a position where you can see where the mind is leaving that sense of shelter and going out and picking up scraps and other things that people spit out, thinking it has food. In other words, it helps sharpen your discernment as to when the mind is actually creating suffering for itself. We complain that the world is making us suffer, but we're the ones who pick up on the things from the world and bring them in, weigh ourselves down. If you're not out there picking up germs, and at the same time you're building up resistance inside, you're not going to get sick. The resistance inside is the right understanding that realizes the true cause of suffering comes from within. It's our craving and clinging and ignorance. That's what we have to work on. The knowledge that sees these things, that understands, okay, there is suffering and it's caused by craving. And by developing the path, we put an end to it. That's what builds up your resistance. That's medicine for the mind. So when you complain about the fact the world is making you suffer, and the world isn't making you suffer, it's just doing its own thing. You're the one who's dragging the germs in and feeding on spoiled food, infected food. So of course you're going to get sick. So when you understand the basic principles of how to look after the mind with ease, live a life of virtue, that you cause no harm to anyone else or to yourself, that's clothing for the mind. And the meditation provides food, shelter, and medicine. The food and shelter of concentration, the medicine of discernment. Then you find that you can live in the world without making yourself suffer over the world. The ways of the world, material gain, material loss, status, loss of status, praise and criticism, pleasure and pain, won't be able to make inroads on the mind because you're not trying to find your food, clothing, and shelter and medicine out there because you've got it in here. Now we can simply watch the world as it revolves around. One of the principles of the Buddha's teachings, as he calls aticitta, the heightened mind. It's like lifting your mind up above these things. So you can watch the whirling around of the world and see, oh, this is the way the human world is. And anyone who tries to find true happiness there is going to be disappointed. So you observe your responsibilities with regard to the world as a way of developing good qualities in the mind. But as for your true well-being, that has to come from within. Never lose sight of that point. At the same time, try to develop the skills that allow you to find well-being. When the Buddha was making the statement, he just wasn't talking about an empty principle. There are skills you develop that allow you to find the clothing, food, shelter, and medicine that the mind needs. And that's what it means to look after yourself with ease.